Brr. Oh, it's raining and thundering, and maybe later on today it's going to be snowing across parts of Wisconsin.
Mm-hmm. We're trying to figure the snow sound.
That's a sound of the past.
Those voices you hear are coming from our weather guys, John Martin and Steve Ackerman, both professors in the Department of Atmospheric and Oceanic Sciences at UW-Madison. As I just mentioned a minute ago, in Denver, the temperature dropped from 83 degrees to 13 degrees in just one day. It's just one example of the stormy weather we've been experiencing this month. So we'll be talking about that with John and Steve. And we'll also take a look at how sunset and sunrise times are determined. Maybe we'll take a look at the weather outlook for November. And if you have a question or comment about the weather, I hope you'll join in. The number to call, 1-800-642-1234. You can also send an email, and if you've got a photo, a weather photo you want us to see, I hope you do that too. That is at ideas@wpr.org. Steve, good to see you again.
Yeah, great to be here. Whoa, yeah. I don't know what happened there.
John, welcome back. Good
Thank
to see you,
Larry. Good to be here.
Yeah, well, October it's a stormy month.
It's a great month, yeah.
Why?
It's actually a pretty month, too. I mean,
it's a beautiful month.
Lots of stuff comes together in October. Yeah, it's beautiful foliage-wise, as you say. The storms are interesting. They have a taste of summer at the beginning of this month, and we're going to have a taste of winter at the end. It's great.
Yeah.
Great month.
So why? Why is it such?
I think it's the most interesting month of the year because the global circulation in the Northern Hemisphere is influenced by tropical cyclones and the advance of winter all at the same time. There's no other time of the year where that's true. You know, the main tropical cyclone season is June to August, September. And when you get into October, it's getting colder at high latitude. The polar jet stream is moving southward. It's bringing back, you know, sort of five-day intervals of stormy weather. And that whole structure is influenced by the poleward recurvature of tropical cyclones. There's no other time like it.
Yeah.
You're getting that big change.
Yeah.
You also get it in the spring, but you're right, you don't get the tropical.
Yeah, the tropical parts just is not there in the spring.
You get the thunderstorm part.
Yeah.
A different type of storm.
Yep. Yeah.
Well, if you're in Denver, you were probably wondering, what in the heck is going on? What causes a big temperature drop like that?
Just the excavation of the high latitude and cold air. You know, when the sun goes down at the North Pole on the 21st of September, that eternal night starts creeping southward. And by the time you get to the early part of October, even just a couple of weeks later, there's a large number of latitudes at high latitude that are now dark 24 hours a day. It's the perfect ingredient to start producing cold air. And if the circulation allows, you can pull some of that down to very low latitude. And that's what happened this particular October. And it was dramatic. I mean, you mentioned that it went down to 13 degrees, but it bottomed out the next morning at 9. So it got even colder than that.
Wow.
If you extend it a little more than 24 hours.
Practically
unbelievable.
Practically almost an 80 degree drop.
In about 30 hours.
Yes, yeah. And, you know, in this time of year, Colorado, that Front Range area, if it's sunny, it's going to get warm.
Yeah,
that's right.
Just,
so, you know, it's not surprising to be in the 80s.
Yeah. And then frigid.
And then that cold air swooping down.
Yeah, well, here in Wisconsin, we had a lot of rain in our area.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, we've had a really rainy year this year.
And
we were 200% above normal in the last over this past October.
And what's the source of that?
I would say that it's, again, the tropics in the Pacific Ocean. You know, and it's not directly the tropics. It's not as if a tropical cyclone makes its way to Madison, and that's why it rained so heavily the first month, the first week of October. But the way that the jet stream sets itself up and the way that it develops its meanders is influenced by activity in the tropical Pacific Ocean. And so it was a pretty busy month off the coast of Japan, Taiwan, you know, in the Philippines. And that influences the jet developments over the Pacific Basin as well as North America. And for that first week of October in particularly, I was away at the time, but it was amazing to see it from a distance. Prolonged period of extraordinary jet speeds across us at 200 millibars, and that drove a really strong vertical circulation, gave us a lot of rain for that week.
Yeah.
Well, we had the same issue out east. They had the same. Was it the same reason that they had some?
Probably so. Yeah, the whole continent was influenced by some of the activity from the tropics in the Pacific this particular month.
And the wind has been strong on the East Coast. Well, we've had some pretty strong winds,
too. We had some good winds here that last week.
Yeah, yeah.
It blew over my barbecue. It said, boom.
Is that right?
Yeah. It just blew it right over.
So the wind is the whole part of this, too, or what?
Yeah, I'd say it's definitely part of that. I think we've had a very energetic weather pattern across North America for much of the month of October, and it's come in different types of energetic pieces. But most recently, we've had one little wave after another come across and develop really intense cyclones. And when you get close to the center of one of those things, it gets windy.
Yeah, you get that strong pressure gradient between the low and outside it, and that generates the force.
Yeah.
Weather climate questions, give us a call at 1-800-642-1234 or email us at ideas@wpr.org. Maybe you've something weather-wise or climate-wise that you've experienced you want to share with us, and that would work as well. 1-800-642-1234, email at ideas@wpr.org. So what have you guys heard about November forecast, or even, well, December, it's so far out.
How about Halloween?
Yeah, I know.
Yeah, Halloween. Well, that's like November. What about Halloween?
We've got some really interesting stuff coming this week. We're going to get an inch or so of snow tonight. Maybe a couple of places around town will get more than that. Then Thursday night into Friday, we're going to have serious snow, maybe half a foot or more of snow.
You're kidding.
No. It's going to be serious.
In southern Wisconsin.
In Dane County. Yep. It's going to snow heavily. And then it's going to stay cold. So I'd say my answer to your first question is that through the first half of the month of November, we're going to stay pretty darn cold, probably colder than normal with snow on the ground. So it'll be an unusual November, I think.
Yeah. And what's typical snowfall in November?
Maybe 6 inches, maybe 4.
So we may typical, get that in one day?
We might get it in one day. And the first inch typically falls, on average, 24th of November. So we're right around Thanksgiving when we, on average, get our first inch of snow. So we're way, way ahead of schedule.
And why didn't you call me and tell me to get my snowblower ready?
Because I knew we would talk about it today. And you'll still have like 4 days to get ready.
I was out there raking leaves yesterday with my daughter and not even thinking about the snowblower.
Yeah, right.
I heard the 1 inch or something. Well,
That's nothing. That's nothing.
But now you're telling me another 6 inches, maybe?
Yeah, I'd say it's easily within that range.
But the ground's still pretty warm.
Right, that's right.
So it may not actually pile up and be 6 inches
on the
driveway. It might melt down.
I agree. I think that's a distinct possibility. In fact, it's likely to make people say, we got 6 inches of snow, and maybe we actually did, and they'll say it was like 2.
Right,
and
yeah.
They'd be right.
Yeah.
So,
Rita in Madison, thanks for calling.
I was just curious, is there any connection to the amount of rain that we get in the spring and the summer in relationship to the amount of snow we should expect in the winter?
Does one predict
not really. That would be really asking the general question of this: what we have in the summer influence the wintertime, and the answer would be no.
Yeah, the atmosphere has very limited memory, and it's that kind of distance in time is way past the atmosphere's memory in terms of... You know, how does one event influence the next? There's no particular connection there at all.
Yeah, and the summertime precipitation, the moisture that's coming from that is largely coming, I'd say, from the Gulf Stream coming up that Gulf of Mexico. So moving up that way. And then, once you get a cold air outbreak, you shut that down. So there isn't like there would be the humidity that we see in the summer would contribute to the precipitation, the snowfall in the wintertime.
Yeah.
So there you go, Rita. Thank you so much. Jerry in Green Bay, it's your turn. Hi, Jerry.
Oh, great show, guys.
Thanks.
That was very interesting. I have two questions, quick questions. Number one would be, does the same amount of rainfall in the entire world basically fall with the same amount every year? You know, is there the same amount of water that comes down all over the earth year after year? Number two would be with this global warming, say in Wisconsin, we got a lot more rain this year. So there's more moisture in the atmosphere. That's what I understand. Will the weather patterns in the same areas continue to be basically the same if that happens?
Those are good questions.
That's a good question. I'll take the last one because I can remember that one.
Yeah.
I think there's going to be with regard to whether or not the overall patterns are the same as we go through global climate change, I think typically what we hear is that regions that are dry are going to get drier And regions that are moist or wet due to precipitation are going to get wetter, which would suggest that the overall climatological pattern of where the precipitation is occurring will remain pretty much similar.
Yeah, and I think it's true even pre-industrialization, in as much as the records allow us to tell that from about 1900 to 1950 or so, that there isn't really globally years where there's great differences between how much precipitation falls globally from one year to the next. And one way you can tell, over continental scales anyway, is that if the rivers keep draining to the ocean, then you know you're there's an excess of precipitation over evaporation over the continent, because otherwise the rivers and streams wouldn't flow out. And I think they might be the best gatekeepers to try and answer questions on the continental scale. Does the Mississippi discharge more water this year as compared to 15 or 20 years ago? Those would be the ways that you might maybe get an idea about whether or not it does vary globally from one year to the next, but probably not by much.
Yeah.
John Martin and Steve Ackerman are weather guys with us today, both professors in the Department of Atmospheric and Oceanic Sciences at UW-Madison. We have lines open for you at 800-642-1234 or email us at ideas@wpr.org. Take a quick look at the news and weather, and then we'll be back with our guests. Stay with us. I'm Larry Mueller. Taking a look at climate and weather right now, Larry Mueller here with my two guests, Steve Ackerman and John Martin from the Department of Atmospheric and Oceanic Sciences at UW-Madison, our weather guys. So, what questions about the weather do you have on your mind? Give us a call at 1-800-642-1234 or send an email and maybe a weather photo to ideas@wpr.org. Several people online. Let's go to Gloria in Shawano, see what's on Gloria's mind. Hi, thank you for calling.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I just have a comment, and that is this. I was very interested when you said there's 6 inches of snow coming later this week down by Madison, but what I've noticed happens is it's like there's a whole rest of the state and big stuff can happen, and there's no comments. Like, what's going to happen to us halfway up the state? Are we getting this snow too, or is it just Madison? And a case in point is when Green Bay and where we live had that tremendous snowstorm, that the last time they had that much snow was like 1882. No mention was ever made of that. And I just like to suggest and ask that you're more inclusive of the rest of the state when these big things happen also.
Well, thanks very much for calling. And that's a good point well taken.
Yeah.
Yeah, fair point.
Yeah, it turns out in this particular event tonight and then again on Thursday, there's not as much of a threat for areas north of the southern part of the state. There's nothing to worry about that far north. It's a good point.
And a listener sent this photo of the Reef Point Marina in Racine in June, and I don't know if you can see that.
Whoa. You see this
photo? The weather caught everyone off guard with high winds and rain, and it damaged pier connections. It looks like almost like a fog that's rolling in or something.
It's like a roll cloud that's right on the ground. So these thunderstorms sometimes have what are called roll clouds right at the front. And if you were watching this in a time lapse, you might see it actually with rotation in it. And it's a harbinger of some pretty intense severe weather on the way. Most often, I bet you that's the case in this case. Yeah, it says it caught everybody off guard with high winds and rain. So it's a really intense, severe storm, and that is sometimes on the front end of one of these things.
Man.
Very dramatic.
Very dramatic.
It's like something out of a Godzilla movie.
They look like smoke.
They do.
Like so gray.
Oh, my God. That's amazing.
Lori and Nina has a question for you. Let's go there. Hi, Lori.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call. You gentlemen sound a lot like a couple other famous gentlemen, and maybe you should call this Weather Talk. My question for you is, I've always wondered if our weather is or moisture in the environment is a closed system. It's kind of like the other gentleman's question. Is it a closed system all the way around the earth, and then the moisture just goes in cycles, and depending on what happens with the jet stream and that, does the moisture kind of get pushed around to different places, because there does seem to be a cyclic nature to it. Mm-hmm. And my other part of the question is, are we in danger of losing moisture to outside of the Earth's atmosphere? I'll listen on air for your response. So thank you very much.
Yeah, thanks a lot for calling, Lori.
Yeah, if you look at the whole Earth, though, as a planet, the water there is pretty closed, particularly in the less than geological timescales. So we do lose water vapor as well as other molecules out to space. With time, they're going to escape. But the timescale of that is much longer than I think when we've been talking about climate change in the next 100 years or so.
Yeah, and there's even addition of water, I think, that comes from comets and various other things that make their way into the atmosphere. And then we probably lose water. It's not out of the whole Earth, you know, atmosphere geology system, but it's kind of out of play in the atmosphere in some of the big underground reservoirs like the Oglala Reserve and stuff like that. That water is really old. It's been sitting there for a long time underground, so it's been taken out of play gradually. So
taken out of play of the atmosphere, but yeah, that's right. But
it's still in the whole system. Glaciers. Yeah,
right?
That's right. So it really does depend how you frame the question. But I think there is a little bit of leakage out and a little bit of addition in from outer space.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
It's not very much, as you say.
So we're not in danger of losing.
No, we're not.
There you go, Lori. Thank you, Janelle in Hilbert. Your turn. Hi, Janelle.
Hello. We live on the east side of Lake Winnebago, and everyone around here says, like, oh, the storm's really bad out by Oshkosh, no big deal, the lake will take care of it.
Hmm.
I think you guys have mentioned before that body of water, it doesn't affect the weather systems. I mentioned this theory to my dad, who also grew up on the east side of the lake, and he mentioned that it's possibly the bluff that's on the east side of the lake from the Niagara Escarpment.
Hmm.
Oh, yep.
Is it possible that bluff might be assisting in breaking up some of those major storms coming across the lake?
And you're talking about thunderstorms, right, Janelle, with summertime
Correct.
Storms?
Yeah. Yes, there's actually a campground on the east side of Lake Winnebago that we frequent, and we love camping there because we'll be like, oh, there's severe weather coming, and you can sit there and watch the storm come across the lake, and it goes to the north of us every time.
Yeah, it's interesting. One thing that comes to mind to me as I'm thinking about this problem is there are a lot of factors, as you point out. There's a little bit of topography to the east side as you get closer to the peninsula and all that. But I wonder if it's just the basic geometry of the lake. It's longer than it is wide. And in the middle of the afternoon, a time when very many of the thunderstorms will occur, there's going to be a sea breeze on the sides of the lake, or lake breeze, where all the air over the middle of the lake is diverging and headed towards the coast. And I think if a storm finds itself ushered there by larger scale winds or, you know, from other types of circulation systems, finds itself over the lake, it finds itself in a quite unfavorable spot to maintain its intensity. So, but that's just the geometry of the lake being long and skinny, relatively speaking, that might do the damage that is what you're testifying to. So it's possible that the lake has an effect on the decay of thunderstorms. It probably doesn't have much of an effect on producing them.
Yeah. Interesting. Thanks, Janelle. Appreciate your call. Kathy in Madison, your turn.
Yeah, thanks for taking my call. I kind of listened to the national weather forecast for this area, and during the fall, when the fall equinox occurred, it really wasn't the same time. It wasn't 12 hours apart. It didn't catch up until about the 25th of the month, and I was wondering, how is that determined when it's equal time?
I'm not sure I get the question.
You mean that the time between, there's not 12 hours of sunlight and 12 hours of daylight?
Right.
Yeah.
Correct.
What is that thing called? It's a little bit displaced from the equinox. The equinox was something else.
Yeah, but it's not displaced the whole month.
No, this was only 4 days, I think you said, right, Kathy?
2 days?
Yeah, 25th or so.
Oh, okay.
2 days.
Okay.
There's a special word for that.
Yeah.
And there is an offset between the equinox, when the sun actually gets to the equator, and the equality between daylight and nighttime. And it's got a special word. I can't remember what it is, but it begins with equi. And it's equilin or something. Someone's bound to call in and tell us. But it is offset a little bit from the equinox.
Yeah.
So we can't really tell exactly every year then?
I think you can. I think the word is just misused. Yeah. Equinox refers to when the sun crosses the equator. On its path to, in this case, to the southern hemisphere. And that is a guarantee. You know that's a certain day, but it doesn't coincide with the day when equinox means equal night. It's not really the same thing.
I gotcha. Yeah. Yeah. All right. Well, that makes sense to me. Kathy, does that help?
Yes, it does. Thank you very much.
Thanks very much for calling. Appreciate your call. We have Mike from Algoma with an email. He's wondering if rain or does rain scrub CO2 from the atmosphere?
So precipitation will wash things out. So it'll both particles like aerosols and dust, and to some degree gases as well, which is why we used to have acid rain. In fact, when it would precipitate out, it would take the sulfur out, and that would cause acidic rain. So it does, but I don't think it's going to – it clearly doesn't have a big enough impact to reduce the amount of carbon in the atmosphere, particularly to offset what we've been seeing emissions by humans.
Mm. Yeah. We have Tim and Toma up next. Hi, Tim.
Hello. I'm just kind of curious as to what your the people think about those folks who spend a few dollars to buy the Farmer's Almanac and whether or not there's anything behind, what they read. And I'll take the answer off the air.
All right. Thanks a lot for calling.
So I think a lot of people buy it because it is entertaining. Mm-hmm. Whether or not you would actually use that to do a seasonal forecast, I would leave that to my colleague.
Yeah. I don't particularly think
there's... What do you think of the Farmer's Almanac?
Well, I don't particularly think there's any value to the forecasts that are made in the Farmer's Almanac. And one of the clues about why is that when I was a little boy, and I love the book, like Steve said, it's full of
facts.
Great stuff. Yeah. So I get it every year, and I really do like to read it. But I now skip over the weather forecast because when I was a little boy, I used to get excited by the weather forecast, and my father would tell me without telling me, this is all nonsense, John. they have a supposed tried and true formula, which they won't reveal, which is, of course, absolutely antithetical to the scientific method. So there's nothing to it when it comes to the forecasts. It was entertaining to me as a 10 to 15-year-old, but I've sworn to pay as much attention as I can to reality. And I don't look at it for the weather forecast anymore.
But the rest of it is fun.
Yeah, the rest of it is great. I completely agree.
And how do you feel about rodents forecasting?
I don't like the fact that we've ceded our intellectual prowess to rodents on the second day of February either. So, but that we can talk about that at another time.
We'll wait for
late January
for that conversation. Thanks, Tim. Appreciate your call. Well, Paul in Lake Geneva, it's your turn. Hi, Paul.
Hello. I had a question about Wisconsin's future with climate change, and particularly in the winter. Is it going to be potentially more normal to be wicked, wicked cold like it has been the last couple of years with Arctic blasts, or will we actually be warmer in the winter? We don't seem to be warming at all, is just my observation. Mm.
Yeah, I would say that overall, it depends on how you're going to do that measurement. I think if you look at the overall winter average temperature, we will be warmer.
No doubt.
But winter's not going to go away, and we're likely to still have these cold air outbreaks that come down and hit our area.
Yeah, I think that's right. And there's a current debate about whether or not a warmer climate will change the circulation in the wintertime so as to make the incidence of those temporary but sometimes frigid Arctic outbreaks a little more prevalent all around the globe so that in any particular winter, will Madison have or will Wisconsin, will the Great Lakes states have a target on their back for a particularly cold winter coming up, and then the next year it'll be somewhere else in the Northern Hemisphere. That is still debated, and I think I'm leaning against that being the result of our warmer climate. I think it's going to be much more like what Steve said. We're going to be on average warmer, and people are going to start to realize we're on average warmer, but not without occasional interruptions of that with some pretty darn cold air.
Yeah,
but we could be snowier, maybe.
It's not impossible. Certainly parts of our state could be snowier because if you know, it's still going to be.
North,
yeah, if you don't have a chance for ice to form on the lakes, then those places that experience lake effect snow already are going to probably see a little bit more of that in the future. But everywhere else, maybe it won't be the case. So there will be some places, I think, that will be able to testify 50 years from now. We get more snow than we used to, but it won't be many of them.
You can join in, too, at 1-800-642-1234. Give a call with your questions and comments, or email us at ideas@WPR.org. Tom emailed to say his dad always said, rain before 7 a.m., shine by 11. Any basis for that meteorologically?
If it's in the summertime, I could see that happening, because summertime you're going to get a lot of thunderstorms, although we don't get very many at 7 o'clock in the morning.
Yeah.
If you live on the East Coast, as some people used to do, with those warm fronts that come through and that steady all-day rain, then no.
Yeah, I think that's right. You can get prolonged periods of rain. And I think, you know, it's interesting you said it depends on where you live for the summertime, too. If you're in western Minnesota or eastern South Dakota, where thunderstorms blow up on the Black Hills on the prior night, you might have a 7 a.m. maximum.
That's true.
And then it'll clear up the rest of the day, but not any other time of year.
So we need to know where his dad is.
Yeah, that's right. That would help. It would be a really big deal.
I'm betting he's from Wisconsin. I'm betting he's from Wisconsin. Well, here we are, daylight savings time. And Sunday morning.
Wow. Well, you get to sleep an extra hour.
I know, but then you suffer for the next...
Till April comes again.
April. So sunrise and sunset are kind of pushed around, pushed back.
No, the clocks are pushed around. The sun's still going to come up and set whenever it wants to.
How are these times determined, anyway? You know the history of this?
I thought it was associated with... conservation of energy, because it came. I first remember it, and maybe it was just because of age that Nixon started this, or maybe it started during World War II, and then they stopped doing it.
Franklin suggested it a long time ago, and I can't remember.
I think
it had to do with
agriculture.
Sure, yeah, and then it's been implemented and stopped a number of times, as you're pointing out. I don't know the history, but it's an interesting history because it's really... I don't know
who likes it.
Yeah, I know. I mean, what does it do? Right.
It also had to do, I think, with school and children. And
That's what I remember from the Nixon era was that, you know, I remember seeing on the television young kids waiting at bus stops, and it was pitch blackout. And so they wanted to move the clocks earlier so it wasn't so dark. But then they're coming home with dark.
Yeah, then they come home in the dark. It's hard to, you know, that's life at a northern latitude. What are you going to do?
Dave in La Crosse, your turn. Hi, Dave.
Hi, thanks. I went around the north end of Lake Michigan about 12 days ago, and the water's higher than I've ever seen it. There was a yards. I was wondering if all that water is just coming from Michigan and Wisconsin, or is it coming from the Upper Great Lakes watershed also?
That's a good question. It's a small wetter watershed. That's one thing really that I've always been surprised of. I mean, you're right. In Michigan, the Army Corps of Engineers does kind of try and control the lake levels, but as you said, the lake levels of both Superior, Huron, and Michigan are up by like a foot and a half or something. So they are... They've all been pretty high. And I think a lot of it is just precipitation. We've just been getting a lot of rain for the last couple of years.
But I think if you know, I've been doing this radio show for a long, long time, and I can remember concerns about the Lake Michigan being way low.
Yeah, that was late 90s.
Late 90s. And it almost seems like cyclical. But it does seem to go up and then it goes down.
I'm sure that it does. I don't know if it's a regular cycle, but I'm sure that it has some periodicity to it. One of the other things is the couple of winters ago we had large extent of ice cover on all of the lakes, 90% or more, and that just cuts evaporation to zero. Or 13, 18, one of the two. It might have been 12 and 13. But that cuts evaporation away entirely. And it turns out that was the year that the recovery really started, as far as I remember.
That's right.
And people, I was shocked at how sensitive the water level is to just that couple of months with the ice on it compared to years where you don't have the ice.
Yeah.
Enormous amount of water fluxed out of the lake in the wintertime.
Yeah. Dave in Madison, your turn. Hi, Dave.
Hello. I'm wondering, is the story that I've always heard that tornadoes never touch down on the Isthmus of Madison true?
Maybe never have, but never will is not true.
There's no particular reason why they wouldn't.
It's, you know, I always like to say we get about 23 tornadoes And so if you take a map of Wisconsin and just randomly draw 23 tornadoes in a year, you're not going to hit very many spots.
Yeah, that's right.
And you can do that. You can do 230, and there's going to be a lot of spaces that don't get hit. And because they don't hit doesn't mean it's a geographical region why they don't
hit. Yeah.
It just hasn't happened yet.
Well, we've had tornadoes in Madison.
Not that long ago. 2004, I think we had a pretty good one.
I remember well because Joy Cardine, who used to do the morning show here, they had the tornado went through their area where they live over on the west side.
That's the one I'm thinking of too then.
It hasn't yet, but...
It hasn't yet, and hopefully it never will, but it can.
Bill in Black River Falls, your turn.
Yeah, I got a question about all these fires in the West. How much is that going to affect the weather here in Wisconsin in the Northeast? I know when Mount St. Helens blew its top, it affected the weather for all over. I'm just curious how it's going to affect here.
Yeah, I think it's going to have a very small effect. It won't be traceable. I think I would say this, though, as an interesting point, not directly related to your question, that the very same conditions that are leading to these fires and keeping them going are the same ones that are going to give us a pretty early taste of winter here the next couple of days in the southern half of the state and make it cold all over the rest of the state. But I don't think there'll be a direct impact of the smoke that results from these fires on changing anything about the complexion of our weather over the next several days. And then certainly there'll be no long-term impact because it's devastating as they are locally. The atmosphere is huge, and it takes a lot of smoke and ash to make a big impact. And these fires are not going to be able to do that.
Yeah. They're not Mount St. Helens.
Yeah, and that was a small eruption.
Right. Well, they're not a meteor.
Right.
That's a couple of miles wide.
That does a lot more damage.
Dinosaurs.
Yeah, right.
Oh, man. So it's going to be cold in November.
Looks like it. Yeah, I would bet
The forecast is kind of interesting because they're calling it sort of normal, the outlook for November. But I think it's because they don't really have anything to tie it to.
Yeah, maybe that's right. It could be a more of a statistical thing that's already been
advanced. It's going to start colder, that's for sure.
No doubt about that. And then they might update that the first week of November and say, yeah, the rest of the month is going to be colder than normal here. Yeah. But that's what I would bet on.
Cold.
Yeah. Had I any extra money.
Don't we get paid for this?
No.
On that cold, happy note, we'll say goodbye. You guys, thanks so much for being with us today. John Martin and Steve Ackerman will be back again in November on the 25th of November. It's going to be cold then, I just about guarantee it. John and Steve with the Department of Atmospheric and Oceanic Sciences, our weather guys. And they'll be back on the 25th of November. Tomorrow, Bassam Shakashiri back to talk about the science behind the fall foliage color change, among other things. And we look forward to his visit and certainly look forward to you staying with us right through the afternoon. Lots in store. I'm Larry Mueller.